forum for frank talk about what people do for a living. Works do.
Hello, and welcome to Works Do. It's November 29th, 2012, and this is episode number 52. I'm Kate Gase Walton. I'm the editor of Works Do, an online collection of essays and interviews in which people ponder their work lives. In this episode, I talk to Laura McKenzie, a high school classmate I haven't seen for 25 years. I wanted to find out why she embarked on law school at age 40, after a couple degrees in religion, and after spending more than 10 years as a stay-at-home mom. So I'm talking tonight to Laura McKenzie, who I wanted to speak to because we went to high school together, so I know we're around the same age. And Laura, I noticed via Facebook that you're in law school, and I can only imagine what kind of path would have brought you to that decision at this stage, and I'm eager to hear what it is. So can you give me the whirlwind tour through the past 20, 25 years?
Sure, I can try. Well, I guess really I think about law as, how do I say this? Law is powerful, and I look at injustice around the world, and I look at poverty and hopelessness, and I feel a real hopelessness, and I really kind of want to be a practitioner of hope, is kind of how I see it. And the practice of law, if properly harnessed, really can provide the power to affect change and change people's lives and provide justice where there hasn't been. And that's really kind of the undergirding passion of why, you know, is because, like, I want to practice hope, and I want justice in the world. But
and so was that something that, I mean, does it surprise you that you're in law school now? Did it sort of creep up on you, that thinking, or did you, or is it not a surprise at all? Was it all part of some master plan of yours?
Oh, yeah. Actually, it's been the culmination of a long, long time. I started college at in Berkeley, California, and the Monday morning of my second week of college, my cousin, who was sharing an apartment with me and three girls, was raped at gunpoint by a serial rapist who climbed in through her bedroom window and shone a light in her face and put a gun to her head. And I was asleep in the next room. There were five of us home. She's the only one who was hurt, and her life has never been the same ever, as, you know, how could it be? But in pretty kind of fundamental ways. So anyway, it got me thinking about issues of poverty and law, which and justice and civil liberties and, you know, the law, if, I don't know how to say this. If the law could put Jenny's assailant in prison, I wondered if it could address the conditions that led to his life of crime in the first place, if law could empower victims of poverty as well as victims of crime. So around that time, actually in high school, I'd become kind of interested in the Christian faith. And I studied as an undergraduate and in graduate school, what the Bible says about justice and mercy and poverty. And I guess I do believe that problems can be addressed at social and systemic levels as well as individual ones. So after graduate school, I decided I wanted to kind of actualize my faith by practicing law. I felt like I was theologically equipped, but I needed to be professionally equipped.
So because I'm missing a chapter in there. So you went to graduate school to study what? Theology?
Religion.
Religion. Interesting. And so when you first came out of college, did you stay at Berkeley? Did you finish there? Or did you transfer?
After 2 years, it had taken a pretty profound toll on my sense of well-being. And I withdrew, and I bought a one-way ticket to Boston, and I flew there and spent the summer on Martha's Vineyard, and then I moved to New York, where I had a like a gap year, and I worked actually in a Wall Street law firm and then as the nanny of a two-year-old in the evenings, and kind of got some healing and some distance. And, you know, it's amazing what you realize when you feel safe, how you, what it's like to not feel safe. I cried a ton, and that was really great. And then I decided, since I had never intended really to leave school in the first place, I transferred to Barnard and graduated from there. So I actually graduated. It took me 6 years altogether to get through.
Right.
But, you know, I just feel so grateful, honestly, that I got through it at all. And then I worked for a year.
And then what was your first job out of college?
I was a legal assistant at a great law firm in New York that was just really, it was just corporate stuff, but it was so fun, and I had no responsibilities, which now seems like so long ago.
Right.
I used to say I wanted to go to church, but other than that, I would, you know, work 24 hours a day, which is basically what their legal assistants do. And I just had a great time, and I knew, you know, with the experience with my cousin and then working in these law firms, I felt like God was opening these doors. But I didn't really feel like it was time for me. Like, my faith was still like marinating in my mind and heart. And so that's why I decided I needed to go to graduate school.
And when you went to graduate school, were you thinking, you know, of entering a ministry, or what was your thought at that point in terms of, you know, how your studies would converge with your work?
Well, so at Columbia, the people who teach religion, for the most part, with the exception of my academic advisor, who's still one of my pals, people are not believers. They really look at the faith from a very secular perspective. And I found that, first of all, surprising, because my family of origin is Jewish, and I didn't understand why people said they were Christians but then didn't believe anything that people for the last 2,000 years have believed. It was very confusing. I didn't understand that there's a lot of theological complexity in the Christian faith. And so I decided I needed to be in a place where people believed what they were teaching. Mm. And so there was a seminary as opposed to a divinity school is a school that equips you for ministry. A divinity school is an educational academic degree. My degree, it's just a Master of Arts in Religion, but it's from a perspective of training and character formation. And, you know, we would be instructed, like, we don't want you to learn about God too much, so don't forget to pray when you're, like, reading your Greek kind of thing. And the professors and the, it was such an amazing experience. Anyway, that's where I met my husband. I went for a week-long class in the beginning of January in 1994, and I met him on a Tuesday. And, I mean, we both, it's corny. I mean, it's really kind of dorky, but I, of course, think that it was, like, God's incredible mercy to me. We knew pretty much right away, but he was in seminary already, and I was living in New York. He was in Pittsburgh, which is where the seminary was, and he drove 8 hours 8 hours each way every other weekend for 8 months until he said, can you please move here, you know? And I was saving money to go to graduate school anyway, and I knew I couldn't afford to go full-time, but I wanted to start because I feel that I have had these kind of long-sighted visions of where I want to go, even though, you know, I've definitely taken the long way in a lot of ways.
So, you know what's funny, just to interject there, what strikes you as, you know, corny and, you know, here's God's way of introducing you to your husband, strikes me, who I will confess comes from a sort of a non-believer perspective, it's just a really excellent 80s movie. That's how I'm envisioning you guys.
It was crazy. It was like this much of an 80s movie.
So tell me though, why not the ministry for you then? Why this legal angle?
Well, you know, I really felt that my education, so this is how it happened. Thomas got a job in San Antonio after we both finished school, and I was thinking, do I go PhD in religious studies? Do I do a law degree? And the only way I can explain it is I just knew I needed to be in the world. I mean, Thomas is the head pastor of a church here, and he's living out like who he wants to be, and his job and his gifts are very well matched, and he's happy and everyone loves him. And, you know, he likes being known and, you know, recognized everywhere. I personally hate that. I don't like being like the pastor's wife. Oh my God. I mean, it's not my personality at all. If you remember me at all.
I remember.
But I really had a sense of wanting to be in the world. And I guess maybe because my family is not, you know, is not Christian. And I knew I wanted to do stuff. I knew with Jenny being raped and all my love of being in law firms and hanging out with lawyers. And I knew that that's what I needed to do. And so I supported myself through graduate school as a legal assistant. When we moved to San Antonio, I worked part-time for the church where he worked, but I also had a full-time job as a legal assistant while I took the LSAT and studied and things like that. And I just knew. I mean, it really is not a job. It's like a vocation. But actually, this is kind of where it becomes kind of crazy, is I got an acceptance letter from the University of Texas Law School on the same day I found out I was pregnant with my older daughter, Ella. And it was like the worst day of my life. I mean, Thomas was in Mexico on a mission trip or something, and I just could not believe it. I just thought, God, what is the matter with you? This is terrible. I don't want to be a mom. I don't want to have to. I mean, it was just really like the worst of the worst. It was like having the two things you kind of want most in the world at the same time, so you don't really feel free to do either fully. And San Antonio is 90 miles from Austin, and I knew I could not drive 3 hours a day, be a new mom, and be full-time in law school, and be married, and be remotely balanced. Not that I'm balanced now, but so anyway, the months before Ella was born were really difficult, really just, I felt like every emotion, you know, I felt angry and cheated and excited and afraid. I mean, it was just a whole range. But in the end, as I chose the job of being a full-time stay-at-home mom, I don't regret that decision at all. I guess that first 10 or 11 years were very transformative. And, you know, there's something about power in their innocence and just their ability to see the world with fresh eyes that I found to be so restorative almost.
So you were at home with them until starting law school, is that right?
Right. So wow. I had Ella and then I had Sophie because mm-hmm. I thought, you know, may as well just get
why not?
Over with.
Right. So what do you plan to do when you finish school?
There's one more teeny factor. Can I tell you?
Oh, yeah, sure.
So, see, there's just, like, me being in law school is such an amazingly, miraculously fabulous thing that I feel that I need to tell you. So I applied to Vanderbilt, and I didn't get in, and I was just really upset because I thought, like, when is it going to be my turn? You know, my children are old enough to leave the house in the morning. Why can't I, you know? But anyway, so I looked. So we live in Nashville and we have a great life. I don't want to move. Thomas is amazing. And he said, I will move. I'll leave my job and go wherever you decide to go to law school and are accepted. Like, he really loves. I never have felt second to his job. I mean, he's really amazing. So, I didn't want to do that. Everyone's kind of happy here. And so I got out the map and I said, where is there a law school where I can drive within like 300 miles? Like, I have to do this. And so what has like a part-time program that I would be able to do if I was commuting? So actually in Birmingham, Alabama, there's a school. It's not highly ranked in any way. It's called Cumberland. it's part of Samford University. And I started drive. I went, so like the day I got rejected from Vanderbilt, I found Samford and I applied and I got in. And so I spent one full academic year driving like 200 miles each way, like four times a week, because I was like, I have to do this. I don't care. You know, I turned 40, like, you know, when I was on the road, and I just thought like, yes, I'm not sad to be 40, because I'm finally like becoming who I want to be and all that kind of craziness. But Belmont started a law school, a brand new law school, before my second year in Birmingham. And so it turned out that I would graduate at the same time, and Belmont is 10 minutes from my house, and they gave me 50% tuition reduction. So I thought that's pretty, you know, much of a no-brainer.
So I'm going to force us to hang up so that you can get back to your studying, or I will feel a huge amount of guilt. But do tell me about what your plans are for when do you finish, and what are you thinking of doing then?
Right. Okay. So I'm in the middle of my second year. I'll be done in the spring of 2014. And I just kind of, ultimately, I would love to work for this organization called the International Justice Mission, which is a international human rights organization that goes to developing countries and finds crimes mostly related to mistreatment of women and children, some slavery issues, and it works to like stop trafficking in other countries by being in the community, finding the crimes, investigating, having the perpetrators arrested, walk them through the legal system, strengthening, you know, the local justice system of the country, and at the same time delivering girls out of brothels and, you know, providing a means of aftercare and training and healing and stuff like that. That's ultimately what I want to do. But I mean, again, like I could be like 60 by the time I get there. I don't have any idea, because my life has not gone the way I wanted. But
well, patience is clearly a strength of yours. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to call you when you graduate, and we'll do a part two and see what you're actually doing. I wouldn't be surprised if that's exactly what you're doing.
That wraps up the interview for today. Thanks again very much to my guest, Laura McKenzie. Thanks also to everyone who's contributed an essay to Work Stew. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening today. The next episode will be released in 2 weeks, and I hope you'll check it out. In the meantime, please let me know what you thought of the interview by sending an email to kate@workstew.com, by posting a comment on the Work Stew website, or by writing a review for iTunes. Thanks again, and bye for now.